Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in. Good to have everybody with us today. I am Al Corlin. I'm with Jim McKinney. We're doing the KER Politics Weekend Radio Program. We're going to start out, you guys, with what's going on in Arizona. One of the senators, Christine Sinema, left the Democratic Party officially. Jimmy, what effect is that going to have on Congress?
Well, so with Herschel Walker's defeat this last Tuesday in the race in Georgia, that gave the Democrats a 51-49 seat advantage.
Sure did.
And that allowed them to control committee chairmanships and control, basically a lot more control in the Senate, in the upper house. So with Kristen Sinema, a thorn in the Democrat Senate side, Chuck Schumer's side, along with Manchin from West Virginia over the last, 2 years, publicly came out and said, I do not want to be associated with the Democratic Party. I don't want to be associated with any political party, that I want to represent the people of Arizona.
Yeah.
And that I don't think the party politics is what benefits them. So this is a very interesting move. Does it change the outcome in the Senate on votes? Probably not, because they still have the advantage with Kamala Harris as the deciding vote.
Certainly they do.
And of course, Sinema is what it's done for Sinema. A lot of people, certainly on the right, are immediately jumping to this and say, oh, fantastic. She's seeing the light, being red-pilled. Maybe many, many different views on it. People are very angry on the left that she's stepping away. But I'll tell you one thing it does for Kristen Sinema. It makes her a very powerful senator for Arizona.
You bet it does.
This gives her... She's the focal point for Republican and Democrat actions to try to shift her one way or the other, which gives her a tremendous amount of political clout and power. Very interesting, and people ought to consider that before they jump to conclusions that somehow this is altruistic, come to Jesus type, change of heart.
So theoretically, what we've got here, we basically have in the Senate, we got a 50-50 representation on the surface.
But not really, because she isn't going to caucus. I don't believe she's going to caucus directly with the Republicans.
Okay.
But here's another very deep thought that people ought to consider. So in Arizona, in the November election, all the major statewide Democratic candidates won. That is not representative of the local elections or the congressional districts on some of those elections. And of course, we've seen tremendous issues in Maricopa County, which pushed the Democratic statewide leadership over the top.
Yeah.
Carrie Lake is filing a lawsuit today for in the governor's race against Katie Hobbs. Katie Hobbs, Secretary of the State, who has apparently won and was certified as the governor in this election, the governor-elect, has some questions to answer. And some of these lawsuits that were filed previously on using the tabulators and the election machines that were kicked out by the court for lack of standing because there was no point prior to the election, now may have standing. And we are going to see other lawsuits in Arizona. So this is why I think there's something connected between Sinema and Carrie Lake and the outcome of the elections in Maricopa County and the potential fraud issues and basically the intimidation of voters or the shutting down machines so many conservative areas could not get their votes in. Kristen Sinema may...
Let me ask you a question.
Let me finish this thought.
Yeah, go ahead.
So what the issue may be here, Kristen Sinema may understand what was happening with the Democratic Party more so than many, and she's positioning herself before some of these lawsuits go forward. Do you understand? She actually may understand, because of her involvement with the Democratic Party,
right,
some of the shenanigans that went on in Maricopa. So this may be a harbinger. Now, again, this is speculative on my part, but it may be a harbinger to strong legal action against the outcome in Arizona elections in this last November election.
You mean like potentially another recount or something like that?
No, I wouldn't think it would be a recount because the recount would be irrelevant. Yeah. What it may do is decertify the election and force another election.
Because?
Because there were people that were not allowed. They've had actually thousands of people sign sworn statements that they were not able to vote because of the machines being shut down and not working, and that the counts were actually potentially problematic. And as well, Katie Hobbs threatening some of the county who did not want to certify the election, some of the county executives or the county representatives that did not want to certify the election because they couldn't, have accurate counts.
Yeah.
She threatened them with law enforcement action. That's intimidation. That's absolutely something that should be questioned and put before the court.
Okay.
So I think there's many potential problems with this election in Arizona that may actually turn against the Democrats in time and actually may open a complete can of worms for the operatives who have been influencing elections, especially in that state.
Jimmy, give me a time frame, would you?
Well, it's going to take a long time, right? We're not going to see answers on this, anytime soon, because the length of time and the process to go through the courts, it just takes a long time, And then, of course, the state should be recusing herself, but under Katie Hobbs' governance, they're going to fight this tooth and nail.
Yeah.
But let's face it, the attorney general of the state in the election has questioned. Said there's been problems that need to be answered, and Maricopa County has not answered those questions.
Yeah.
Many, many people, most Americans have seen it, and according to polling, about 70% of the electorate, including Democrats, believe that there's a question there and something needs to be fixed in Arizona.
Boy, what a mess. I mean, this should be so cut and dry, and it's just gotten to be so critically screwed up.
Yeah, you see the problems in Arizona, you see the problems in Georgia, Fulton County in particular. You see the problems in Allegheny County and Philadelphia and Pennsylvania. You see the problems in Detroit. These are very specific areas that are run and controlled by Democratic operatives, progressive operatives that, in my view, have justified in their minds whatever it takes in order to win the elections. And of course, there's a lot of money involved in it, a lot of influence. And what we're seeing with the involvement of the big tech companies and government censorship, which we should talk about in one of the later segments.
Then in the next segment, go ahead.
Yes. So with those problems, there's some real questions that are going to be apparent to the American public. And of course, now it's up to the Republican leadership in the House to do investigations on these issues and get transparency out there so that people could actually decide on how much censorship, how much crushing of the vote there has been, how much crushing there of information there has been, and the complicity of people like James Baker from the FBI and others, Anthony Fauci and others, in the government to silence opposition views.
Well, it's getting more and more complicated. Jimmy, we got to take a real quick commercial break. I'd like to, in the next segment, I want to get over to a little bit more about what's going on with Elon Musk and his company Twitter. Obviously, could be a very interesting day today in once we see what he decides to release. Stick around. Going to be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back. Jimmy and I are back. We're going to continue to talk about what is not continue, but we're going to talk now on a different subject. We're going to get into what Elon Musk is resulting from his takeover of Twitter, of some of the messages that he is going to put out to the public. I think this is a very interesting thing personally that's going on, and I applaud Elon Musk for doing that. Jimmy, why don't you give us a start?
Sure. So this week there's been, it started last Friday night. There was a initial release of information from Twitter files and emails by Matt Taibbi, an independent journalist, who outlined some serious efforts by Twitter executives to control speech and to silence individuals, especially individuals with conservative views or positions against either COVID, or in particular, what Matt Taibbi focused on was the silencing of the Hunter Biden laptop story in October in 2020 prior to the election.
Yeah.
Now, what most polls show is about 1 in 6 Democrat voters who voted for Biden would not have voted for him had they been aware of the laptop contents and the involvement of Joe Biden with Chinese businesses and Ukrainian businesses through his son Hunter's companies. That would have potentially changed the outcome of the election. And that isn't to include the ridiculous pictures and the corruption of Hunter Biden himself. And his, you know, that's irrelevant. What is very important is the indications on that laptop that have been proven true that he was directly involved with his father in corrupt activities and influence buying from both the Chinese government and other foreign entities.
That's what's going on all over. You can add the Ukraine to China, and I'm sure there are many, many other instances, similarities, I guess I should say, of agreements that our president really profited significantly from.
That's right. And so the problem, so this is what Matt Taibbi put out in the first tranche. And one of the nuggets in there was that Jim Baker, the former senior legal advisor, the senior lawyer for the FBI under James Comey, and then quit because of the Russian collusion narrative, that he oversaw and allowed to continue to buy, you know, getting illegal warrants on people like Carter Page. And of course, attacked General Mike Flynn.
Yeah.
Jim Baker was reviewing and editing the release to Matt Taibbi as the Twitter lawyer. Elon Musk found out about it and immediately fired, I believe it was on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It was. Jim Baker.
Yeah.
So here you have a senior government official, an FBI officer, with one of the most powerful, you know, positions in the legal system in our nation, law enforcement position, using his power to undermine a presidential authority and then to silence opposition and information that was actually directly linked to the 2020 election of that same president that he tried to undermine previously. This is insane. I mean, it's unbelievable the level of corruption that these officials within agencies of the U.S. government have gone for. And this is only the beginning. This is just the beginning.
Jim, give some predictions of what you think, how you think this will continue, would you? Just your thoughts, just your opinions, man.
Sure. So, I'll give you some more facts of what's happening right now. So Barry Weiss, another independent journalist, a very well-respected one that has kind of moved away from the corrupt media, corporate media talking points, the leftist and progressive Democrat support talking points, in particular on the COVID lockdowns, she actually is now releasing the second tranche of information. And this is without Jim Baker's review of some of these documents. Barry Weiss has actually pointed out that there was a complete organized effort by senior members of the Twitter staff to blacklist, shadow ban, and censor conservative viewpoints on massive level. Now, what's interesting about this is Twitter executives, including Jack Dorsey, who was the previous CEO, testified under oath in Congress that they did not do this. So these people are susceptible to, I mean, if there's any Department of Justice oversight at all, and there may be because, you know, there's a lot of angst and animosity on the left from, you know, big tech control as well, they may be facing what many people in the Trump administration faced, which was lying to Congress. Now, we'll see if I don't know if the Garland regime under in the DOJ is willing to prosecute anybody that's politically against their positions, but this will be a tremendous test. And what where the prediction? So your point, you know, your question on, you know, my predictions and thoughts on the future, what's happening here. There's another case that actually is more important than what's happening with the Twitter release. The Twitter release is providing information to people that didn't understand it in the past. Many people on the left are fighting against it, but these are influencers on the left and journalists on the left that are basically mouthpieces for the Democratic Party. A bunch of people that were not aware of what was happening in the middle, either independents or even Democrats that didn't ever hear of these problems, are now getting an open flow of information on what happened. That's going to have a very big impact. But the other case, which is more important, is this Missouri versus Biden case, where the attorney generals of Louisiana and Missouri have filed suit against the Biden administration for using government entities, government individuals, government resources to influence and shape and censor individuals over COVID policy.
Yeah. And Jimmy, yeah. I know the Missouri was pretty effective in their lawsuit, but I really don't remember how effective was Louisiana in terms of their lawsuit.
Oh, so it's a joint lawsuit between the two of them. And okay. What has happened just recently, I know we've only got a little bit of time here, and we'll have to finish and roll into the next segment as well.
Got about
but what
minute.
Is Anthony Fauci was forced to be deposed by this in this trial. He came up with over 170, I don't know, answers on his questions. Jen Psaki, the spokesperson, and senior members of the Biden administration will now be forced to testify under oath on their influence and how they use their government assets in order to silence people.
Got to take that break right now. Got a break for the news. You guys will be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back. Talk to the second half of Corlin Economics. We're going to talk about KER politics is now what we're calling it. Sorry. The old man had a little bit of a brain freeze there. We're going to continue talking about what Elon Musk is doing with his company Twitter. Really rather some significant things going on from there. A lot of information is being released that was not being released under the previous ownership. As I said at the end of the last segment, I applaud Mr. Musk for doing that. I think not full disclosure, but I think complete transparency in something as important as Twitter is absolutely critical. Jim, what else did you want to say to finish up this particular discussion?
Well, I think just finishing up with what's happening with the Missouri versus Biden, Tracy Beans, Undercover DC, I'd recommend going to her website to look at the details on this case. The judge involved in the case has had the massive pushback from the Department of Justice and the Biden administration, where their lawyers have been attempting to silence and stop these depositions and stop this information from coming out on the government actually actively involved in silencing information on COVID and the vaccination status and anybody that came up with ideas on how to actually treat it outside of some of the very damaging remdesivir and ventilator processes that were that were pushed by the CDC and Health and Human Services. As the Biden administration is pushing back, the judge is actually, you know,
Jimmy, you got to speak up a little bit.
Sorry. Yeah. As the Biden administration is pushing back, the judge is saying, "Hey, no, these are serious issues," and he's forcing the depositions. And of course, they've appealed. The Justice Department has appealed to the Fifth Circuit.
Yeah.
Fifth Circuit's throwing it right back to the judge and saying, "You know what? These let the judge decide down here because these are valid, you know, positions and arguments." Who knows where it's going to go? Because really, people have lost so much trust and faith in transparency in our government that you just don't know what's going to happen. But it appears that the judge is actually taking a bold stand and working hard towards constitutional support of free speech, and that government should not be involved in silencing speech. One of the key things that came out in Barry Weiss's release, a blacklist, one of the key people that had tremendous respect internationally was a doctor from Stanford, Jay Bhattacharya. And Dr. Bhattacharya was basically one of the creators of the Great Barrington Declaration, which gave advice on how to handle the COVID processes. And the same group that Anthony Fauci and Francis Collins of the NIH attacked and did everything they could to silence them. The government apparently got involved in helping silence those voices and reduce the flow of their information and actually cut them off. These people were giving advice that would have saved thousands of lives, maybe tens of thousands of lives. And you know, what's so disturbing is the fact that our government was involved and continues to be involved to push agendas that look like they favor pharmaceutical corporations over individual, not only individual liberties, but over individual health and their future.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question. We've been talking about this on our daily editorials. I want to put in a plug for the daily editorials, by the way. Those of you that are listening to this program on the stations that carry our show, please be aware that we have a very active blog. Our blog has upwards of 100 comments a day. Very, very informative, for lack of better terms. Totally uncensored. And your knowledge of political issues, actually internationally, can be greatly enhanced by looking on the blog and perhaps even commenting yourself. We have people on the blog who have been with us since 1900. That's 22 years, basically, these people have been with us. So for those
2000, not 1900. It's been a while since
1900. I'm sorry, 2000. And so those of you who are listening on the radio, simply go to www.kereport.com. Once you are admitted to the site, which is an automatic, simply click on politics, and you can learn from all of the opinions that are given on the blog. Some very, very bright people who spend a huge amount of time studying international political issues. Check it out. Jimmy didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think that's very important.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. And to get people out there, get them involved and to start thinking, get more information out there. You know, we look at opinions and people's thoughts as, you know, as everybody should have the right to have their opinion and their thoughts.
You bet.
And, you know, they should be able to learn and expand and not have a closed mind. I think it's very important to do that. Not everybody agrees. Not everybody thinks that all this information is right. And some people get a little bit heated in some of their positions. But you know what? That's what free speech is all about. And that's why I'm such a strong
That's exactly what free speech is all about. We have no censorship whatsoever associated with KER politics. You can say what you want.
And sometimes it's a bit scary for people, but guess what? Again, that's what free speech is about. We're not here to protect your feelings. We're here to get your mind to think. And with this whole idea of censorship and what's happening with Elon Musk, he's breaking a dam that has been built up by the tech companies in cooperation with basically what I'll call the deep state, with bureaucrats in Washington that want to control your future, and the Democratic Party. And that is being run by corporations that fund these people for their benefit.
Yeah.
So Elon Musk right now is breaking the dam on information that was locked up in Twitter, to one of the most important platforms for getting information out. Now, you know, a lot of the left and these proponents for the Democratic Party, actually spokespeople, which I will say are basically all the corporate media outlets that you can imagine out there, they are pushing back, and a lot of their reporters are pushing back. In fact, I was just responding to an article in CNBC by Laura Kolodny, who basically is complaining that SpaceX, Tesla, and the Boring Company executives are bringing, or, you know, helping Elon Musk at Twitter by bringing engineers over in order to help them kind of sort the problem out. And her big complaint is, how is it, you think it's fair that, or that it's, right to have people from a public company actually work at a private company? I want to know where the law is that says that I can't go work for a private company if I'm working for a public company. I don't know where that law is. And
I don't believe that's a law. I've worked in that area for 40 years as a consultant. I don't believe that's a law. No.
But here is a CNBC reporter attacking Twitter and Elon Musk for opening up the books.
Yeah.
And this is what's so frustrating. You're seeing a lot of pushback from the left and journalists who should be making the effort to understand censorship and what its impact is, rather than participating in the censorship. But it's a political agenda for them, and that is what is so frightening to them. Because if they lose control of the media, if they lose control of the information, they're going to lose control and the power that they have. And this is directly related to both ideologues as well as those editors and the corporate boards that are making a profit off of suckering the American people.
You bet. And that's the last banchan, in my opinion, of free speech. That's the one thing that social media has done, is it's really brought the concept of free speech into the forefront, in my opinion. And I applaud Mr. Musk. Going to be right back. Wrapping up KER politics right now, and we're going to go expand from a domestic level to an international level. A lot of things going on in China, obviously. We're going to chat a little bit about them. The same thing is true with Ukraine, and the same thing, believe it or not, is true in South America with Peru and Brazil. Jimmy, let's talk about Peru first, the impeachment of the president.
That's right. So the Peruvian president, Pedro Castillo, this last week, he's been under pressure. He's a leftist. He's a progressive socialist, former teacher.
Right.
And basically, he attempted, after I think the third attempt for an impeachment trial, where he had some support. They had failed in the past. But he attempted to dissolve their parliament. And, of course, their constitution gives some authority to do that. However, what happened a couple hours later was he lost all support, almost all support, in the Peruvian legislature, and they voted 101-6 with 10 abstentions to impeach him. And then they had the military arrest him. So he's being held right now for prosecution for conspiracy and rebellion. because of his attempts to do that, and because he'd been under the impeachment threat for a while because of some corruption charges and, of course, you know, mishandling of the government.
Yeah.
This is not new to Peru. There's, I think, been in the last 6 years, there's been about six different presidents. He's right now, he'd been working earlier this, you know, today and yesterday with the Mexican foreign minister asking for asylum. And that'll be interesting to see how that turns out on the fact that he wouldn't get a fair trial in Peru.
They sound like they're pretty opinionated as a nation about this guy. And yeah, it's all negative, man.
Pretty strong.
Yeah.
So the vice president, Dina Boluarte, she's the now sitting president.
Yeah.
Don't know if she's going to call for an early election or if she'll stay through the, I think, a 2026 is the next normal election for them. But basically, this is very problematic for Peru. Is it going to have a big problem, you know, impact others? Peruvians have a relationship. You know, they've got there's been some challenges in the region. They've got, you know, again, a relationship with other socialist nations. They've cut deals with China. They've cut deals with Venezuela, Bolivia, some of the other more leftist areas. So we'll see what happens. And that, of course, spills over into what happened with Bolsonaro and Lula da Silva, the election in Brazil, where Lula da Silva, he was arrested and charged by a court, 19 judges, of corruption and sentenced to prison. But then his own appointed judges overturned that and allowed him to run in this election.
Yeah.
So then Bolsonaro, the incumbent, lost in a questionable election. But the problem is there's been massive protests all through November about the outcome of that election. And we haven't seen the end of that. So what it is, this conflict that is bearing itself out in the United States, in Europe, in China, back to almost Cold War era of left versus right, socialism versus conservatism and, you know, independence. There's some nuanced changes, clearly, but we're back to a very destabilized period in public politics right now around the world.
All over the world. Speaking of all over the world, Jimmy, let's head a little southeast from Peru. Got a whole bunch of really, what I would have to say, tumultuous events going on in Brazil. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So again, as we did talk about it, there with the protests, they're massive. They've been massive all through November. The Silva government is now beginning to appoint its cabinet. There is the potential, and before he is sworn in, there is the potential for a military intervention. The military, and there is some legal precedent because of the fact that Lula or da Silva had these previous convictions, he would not be allowed to run for president again if they were upheld. Of course, they were thrown out by his own appointees. The military is the deciding factor in the Brazilian constitution, so there is a possibility that we could see some destabilization there.
Yeah. Okay, over to China. That a lot of eyes are focused on China right now, and that's going to continue to be the case. They are the country, in my opinion. It is the country, in my opinion, that could assume the number one position in the world in terms of economic and military strength.
Well, and if they're not put in check, they will. They will within the next decade. Probably.
Yeah.
A lot of analysts, and I worked with them in the people that are responsible in the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, the China division there, which has, you know, a lot of people that look at this, a lot of PhDs, a lot of thinking people, and they're basically responsible for the military view. They've been surprised at how quickly the Chinese have grown militarily.
You bet.
What's happened, though, the last week is that the protests over the zero COVID tolerance policy had exploded to the point where the Chinese government had to balk for a little bit to allow people a little more freedom and not be forced in these massive zero.
Did that surprise you, Jim? It surprised me a lot because the government of China really, really is very, very intent on being authoritarian. But there were some mistakes that were made in terms of the lockdown. People actually died because of that.
Well, and of course, you know, it's very questionable whether any of these, as we get more and more information, whether any of these procedures or policies were actually effective. And it looks like, according to the deposition by Anthony Fauci, that they actually looked at China as a precedent-setting policymaker for the U.S., and it turns out that that has been incredibly damaging. So China, they were under pressure. I agree with you, Al, that they, in fact, probably, you know, are very focused on control.
Yeah.
But this was becoming such a problem so rapidly, and of course, there's economic implications as well. They had to back off. But again, this is only for the public eye. You don't really know what's happening underneath with the Chinese government and the CCP.
No, you don't.
They still have control. They will still control people through social media, through social credit scores, through these tech apps that track every individual. And they will use their authorities, their law enforcement, and their military as a tool to silence opposition and to shut people down, though publicly they'll make other positions. So that's what we're seeing right now in China. And of course, you've always got the problem with what they've done with Hong Kong to silence individuals in opposition and the threats against Taiwan.
Well, we haven't seen the end of China for a long time. I mean, Taiwan is a situation that is guaranteed to come up here in the relatively near future. And I think on top of Taiwan, you can get a similar situation occurring in Hong Kong. Ukraine, we have a lot of listeners who would like comments on the weekend radio show regarding Ukraine. Not looking good over there for the Russians, that's for sure.
Yeah, so this week, the interesting things that happened, the Ukrainians hit three deep strike Russian airfields, one in Crimea and one near Moscow, and another one in very far from the Ukrainian borders. Of course, the Russians used massive retaliatory strikes to hit back at the Ukrainians, attempting to hit their infrastructure, shut down power plant, water plants, basically attacking the population. Now, as the England, you know, people in London knew from the Blitzkrieg, that didn't stop them and make them any weaker. It actually strengthened their resolve.
You bet.
Same thing happened in Nazi Germany in 1945 with the massive strikes, 1944 and 1945. Strategic bombing campaigns did not effectively diminish capacity for the population. I don't see that's going to happen. And the Russians have a very serious problem. The First Guards Tank Army out of Moscow had tremendous losses. The Fourth Guards Tank Army, having heavy, heavy losses. They're going to have a tough time repositioning and putting themselves in a position to actually have control over Ukrainian territory over the next few months.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right on that one. You guys, we're up to 9 minutes and 37 seconds. We're going to have to cut it here within. We can't go over 10 minutes on this particular segment. Again, I want to invite everyone who's listening on the radio to come to our blog, www.kereport.com, and then when you're there, just click on politics. Have a great weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.